You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, it's the weekly news roundup. Record heat in a third of the country, record rain in the Northeast, and a drop in inflation numbers. Those stories and more today at 6 on 1A+. Now, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says last month was the hottest month for the planet on record. Southwestern cities are currently breaking records as a heat wave sweeps the country. In Wisconsin, the U.S. Drought Monitor lists all of southern Wisconsin under a severe or extreme drought as of the latest data on Tuesday. Scientific American reports that extreme heat is the top cause for weather-related deaths in America, killing more people than hurricanes, floods, and tornadoes combined. A Milwaukee-based extreme heat specialist is here to talk about heat wave preparation and how to stay safe when the hot weather comes to Wisconsin, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about protecting yourself from extreme heat? How do you stay cool during the summer months? Does your community have resources to reach out and help people when a heat wave comes through town? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nick Tomorrow is the Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. Nick, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Now, I think we don't always take heat waves seriously as a health threat. Can you talk about how potentially serious they can be?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like in your intro, well, certainly not a good fact, but heat-related death is the number one cause of weather-related death. And as you said, I think we're headed into the middle of summer here. We really have not had extreme heat yet. So sometimes people get a little bit complacent. So I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about this subject and just remind people that it can really sneak up on you at different times. And we really need to be conscious of heat-related illness for ourselves. And then we as a local health department always focus on the most vulnerable in the community in these types of events.
I wanted to look back. We had the big 1995 heat wave. A lot of people think of Chicago, understandably, but it also affected Milwaukee and other parts of southern Wisconsin. 1999 heat wave. What kind of lessons, from a community health standpoint now, what kind of lessons have we learned that a community like Milwaukee can do to help prevent the worst from happening?
Yeah, you bring up 1995. We work closely with Tim Halbach with the National Weather Service. He speaks to our groups that we work with quite frequently, and we did in that 1995 heat wave had 91 direct heat-related deaths, so really big event. One of the things Tim always stresses is that because these heat-related events are so far apart, we do sometimes become complacent. So we really, again, stress the importance of preparedness for these events and then really response during. We organize around the community with a lot of different community partners to both talk with them about their preparedness for the community and their messaging to individuals they work with directly, and then also, you know, response activities they would take in an event like this. So if we have a heat emergency, we're actually working with Milwaukee County Office of Emergency Management and other partners to have coordination calls with a number of community partners, governmental agencies, to really look at what are our resources, what are our needs, who are the most vulnerable, where are they in our community, and how do we reach them most effectively, both communication-wise, with resources, do we need to open up, you know, special cooling centers, things like that. So a lot of coordination goes around, especially events like 1995 that would be elevated to a heat emergency.
You mentioned vulnerable populations. Who are we most worried about in the event of heat waves?
Yeah, so we really stress the elderly. So those who are our friends, our loved ones, our acquaintances who are older, infants, young children. We think a lot about people with underlying conditions, both heart and lung conditions, but other chronic conditions as well. Think about those with access and functional needs or certain types of disabilities. There's a good percentage of people who have work in outdoor settings that we really have to be conscious of and modify work schedules or modify work at different times. If you live in an area or a home without air conditioning. And then also you know, we stress as a health department looking at what types of medications are you on, and what how those types of interactions can occur in extreme heat events. So really just exceptionally important to think about those in your life, whether it's those who are part of your family, friends, or just neighbors, anyone you can think of during these types of times that really could use a helping hand, and checking on them frequently in especially these really extreme events.
Talking to Nick tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. We're looking at heat wave preparation. Now, it's warm in Wisconsin today. We're not at a heat wave right now, but we're watching a lot of the country deal with extreme heat. We're talking about what we need to know, what individuals and what communities can do to prepare in the event of a heat wave. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guests, things that you see in your own community, things you worry about. And if you have people in that basically third of the country dealing with this right now, what are you hearing from them? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Nick, what kind of temperatures and heat indexes do you, as an emergency preparedness coordinator, what are the levels where you start to get worried?
We coordinate very closely with the National Weather Service. So we have three different categories. We start with a heat health update that we would be putting out messaging. That is a heat index value. So when you talk about heat index, the heat index is a combination of looking at both the air temperature, but also humidity. So really it's kind of how hot does it really feel outside. So the heat index in a heat health update is when it's expected to be a heat index of 95 or higher during daytime hours in the next 1 to 7 days would activate that first kind of the lowest level of our thresholds. Heat health advisory, we would issue this typically anywhere from 6 to up to 36 hours prior to an advisory expected. That would be a heat index value expected to be 100 or higher, or daytime heat index values expected to be 95 to 99 for 4 consecutive days. Really important to think about the fact that sometimes we just have heat indices and temperatures that are extending for several days, and that really begins to kind of fatigue individuals and the community in general. And then what we're most focused on and within this discussion, what we want to stress most, and especially when we're talking about those who are most vulnerable, is that heat emergency, true heat emergency, and that would be a heat health watch or a warning. That we would try to get out messaging, obviously, as early as possible for anticipation, typically 24 to 48 hours at least, working with the National Weather Service. That heat warning really is looking at expected heat index values that are equal to or exceeding 105, and then nighttime heat index values that are 75 or higher for at least a 48-hour period. Also, and there's a lot of numbers, I know, but just, you know, you're sure talking about high heat index. So heat index values of 100 to 104 for 4 or more consecutive days. So again, if you think about it, if you just cannot get out of the heat, especially if you don't have air conditioning at home, and even in the nighttime, that heat index and temperatures are not falling below a certain level, it's just so fatiguing to people, and especially those with chronic conditions and those who are going to be most susceptible to these environmental conditions.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Elizabeth is with us in Verona. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to comment that I have family in Farmington, New Mexico, which is up in the Four Corners region of New Mexico. They have feels like temperatures of, or air temperatures of over 100 degrees or right around 100, but not everyone realizes that that's abnormal for that area. It is a high desert area at the base of the Rocky Mountains, and it's weird to have that much heat and not the huge temperature swings at night to cool off. It just keeps getting hotter.
How are they doing out there, Elizabeth?
They're luckily it's an area that does get hot, so they do have air conditioners. I'm lucky to have my mom actually visiting me in Wisconsin right now. She has MS and she doesn't do well with the heat. So it is what it is, but you stay inside and you drink lots of water and just try and stay healthy.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. Now, Nick, you mentioned something. Elizabeth mentioned something that reminded me. Our colleagues here at WPR reported those nighttime temperatures here in Wisconsin in the summer, on average, they're going up in most places in the state. That might not be an eye-popping number as the, you know, the daytime high might be, but that can be a really big problem, right?
Yeah, again, you know, just think about those heat events, and if you cannot cool off, even at night, that's when we're going to have a lot more problems in individuals or the general population. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, again, yeah, thank the caller for the information. I pulled up what's called a heat and health tracker on the CDC website, Climate and Health Program. Really impressive in terms of what's going on around the country. I think individuals on the call have probably heard, you know, Texas, Florida, New Mexico, Arizona, really just extended periods of high heat. And it's been a pretty unprecedented summer so far. I think you mentioned maybe at the outset that three of the highest, the hottest days on record in the history of tracking earlier in the month here. So,
thanks again for that call. We're talking to Nick Tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department, talking about the dangers of extreme heat and how to protect our health and how communities can prepare. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have people you check in on in times of bad weather, including heat waves? What do you do to make sure they're doing okay? What kind of efforts do you see in your community to prepare for extreme temperatures like this? Do you happen to be listening online from one of those parts of the country that's getting that incredible heat right now? Knock on wood, we're not getting into Wisconsin yet. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Nick Tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for Milwaukee Health, and we're finding out how to protect ourselves and our communities from extreme heat waves like we're seeing across so much of the southern United States right now, and what local governments can do to prepare. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your experiences with a heat wave, maybe right now if you happen to be listening in one of those parts of the country. Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Back to your calls. Samantha is with us in Menominee. Samantha, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask about, Samantha?
I was just hoping that your guest could explain to listeners the difference between a heat index and a wet bulb temperature. I know that that's been that phrase has been popping up in the news more and more as information about climate change begins to surface more, and I think will be continue to be more and more relevant to folks going forward. I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Samantha, great question, and I will admit I get confused about this. Nick, can you help straighten us out?
Yeah, I'll do my best, and, you know, kind of wish my friend Tim was on here to help me out. But wet bulb temperature is defined as the lowest temperature that can be reached under current ambient conditions by the evaporation of water only. That's not going to help our listeners right now. So I am not an expert on wet bulb temperature. I will be very upfront with that,
sure,
that statement. So as I'm on with you here, I will read more and I'll explain this better to you.
So I think we're overdue for a conversation with Tim Halbach, actually. It's been a while, so we should bring him back on to talk about the nuts and bolts of weather. Thanks for the suggestion, actually. That could make a great future topic. And thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Nick, as we reach out to people in the event of a heat wave, for individual people now, like, what are some of the warning signs that, heat is getting to you, you need to stop what you're doing and take care of yourself?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. You know, really important. So think about first, you know, I'll first talk about heat exhaustion. So if you are experiencing, or certainly if you're with someone, heavy sweating, if you're looking at someone, they look pale, you know, if you're experiencing or someone's describing muscle cramping, tiredness, obviously weakness, somebody's looking dizzy, feeling dizzy, headache, you know, just signs of nauseousness and vomiting also can take place during heat exhaustion, up to and including fainting. Heat stroke, really, when we're reaching this much more emergent stage in the body where core body temperature is rising to a very dangerous level. you can actually start to get to the point where you're not sweating. That's a huge red flag, and something that as an individual or if you're with somebody to really take note of and seek immediate emergency help, rapid pulse. Likely have oftentimes a throbbing headache, dizziness, nausea, confusion, leading to unconsciousness. This is really a state where the body is at such extreme core temperatures that you can end up really risking organ failure and multi-system organ failure. So this is a situation where we end up with individuals in the hospital and sometimes hospitalized for good amounts of time.
And Nick, as I understand it, there's a concern that we may undercount the impact of heat waves sometimes because there might be an increase in some causes of death, not direct heat stroke, but people who are vulnerable to bad conditions, people with cardiovascular problems, things like that. Who should be particularly watchful about hot weather when it comes to people with, existing health conditions?
Yeah, you named, those with underlying heart conditions and respiratory conditions are probably top of the list. But really, one of the callers earlier, those with MS, those with chronic conditions of many sorts, diabetes, we track, especially during heat emergencies, we track certain codes within hospital systems for those who may have really been hospitalized or severely affected through heat exposure. But, the best thing we can say in a venue like this where we're able to talk to a lot of people is just really thinking about your underlying health conditions and anything that's, significant where you're on medications, certain types of cardiac medications for mental health. There's many, many different things that you really want to take note of. Those who are on medications for blood pressure, incredibly important to think about, your exposure in these heat events.
Talking to Nick Tomorrow, Environmental Health Director and Emergency Preparedness Director for the Milwaukee Health Department, talking about how we get ready for heat waves, what to do when they come along to keep everybody safe. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Nick, for outdoor activities, employers who have people working outside or sports coaches who have a bunch of, say, high school kids playing outside, when do you reach out to them and say, maybe take some steps to lower that risk?
Yeah, again, I think one of the most important things we do is that we're putting out public messaging. And obviously the National Weather Service is just, a champion at this in terms of the situational reports they put out and help to get out the message. But from a public health standpoint and a health agency standpoint, we would be trying to really, within all means of communication that are feasible, put out information for organizations like that to make decisions. We did have a number of slightly different, but during the air quality problems recently that really reached a higher level than we've had in recent history here. We had a lot of consults on what would be reasonable to be doing outside. And that's a common scenario in the heat events as well, where we would have outreach. Regarding whether it's reasonable to have sporting events and things of the sort.
Now, for longer term things with climate change, with periodic El Nino conditions like we have now, are there things you see Milwaukee doing to, change the landscape in the city for the future to try to lower the risk of future heat waves?
I think a lot of people on the call have probably heard. Green infrastructure is incredibly important. Environmental Collaboration Office, ECO, at the city is a really important division or department in the city that is promoting green infrastructure. So tree canopy is huge, really trying to reduce that heat island effect, which occurs most, significantly in a downtown area. So the more concrete you have, the more heat you are going to retain. So, there are a lot of efforts both in Milwaukee and other parts of the country to really look at that, what we call green infrastructure and the built environment to really help, especially long-term. Can't stress enough the importance of tree canopy. There was Dan Buckler did a great job organizing with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, last year, a heat mapping event throughout our community. And so we had that data to look at We also, as an organization, have a colleague here who updated what's called a heat vulnerability index. So it looks at a lot of information and maps out, based on population data, natural and built environment data, sociodemographic information, what are the parts of our city and county that are the most susceptible to extreme heat? And that, as a public health agency and other agencies that work in the space to try to help protect people, it's incredibly valuable to be able to target our efforts.
Just a quick question, Nick. You mentioned the air quality. I'm looking at the wildfire smoke map. It's slowly making its way across Wisconsin again. I just wonder, you know, you're a health guy in Milwaukee. Did you ever think you'd have to be dealing with a public health issue of wildfire smoke?
You know, it's a great question. I was out west one time and you know, close to wildfires. Really impressive what we were seeing. This this was really unprecedented. And when I was actually doing a different media piece on the air quality at the time, and the reporter asked me, and I didn't know at the time, but I don't think we had reached, you know, levels any time in the history of our area to close to what we had. It was a day, I remember it was the Tuesday of that week. I went outside and you could literally smell the smoke. It was, and myself, who have no underlying respiratory issues, I was really, really affected out there. So it was pretty impressive.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
All right. Thanks for the time. Thanks for getting word out.
That's Nick Tomorrow, Emergency Preparedness and Environmental Health Director for the Milwaukee Health Department. Nick joined us to talk about extreme heat and how to stay safe in the summer months when extreme heat comes along. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, hazing hits the Big Ten as Northwestern's football coach is fired after reports of problems on the team. Look at the hazards of hazing at all levels and efforts to prevent it from happening in the first place. And a long-running game show has made a cultural tradition out of grocery store prices and guessing what things cost. We'll meet the author of the new book, Solving the Price is Right, and you can join in with your Price is Right memories and questions. That and more. It's all coming up Monday here on Central Time on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday. We'll get you ready for summer potlucks. We'll get recipes for when we need that dish to pass. First, summer is a great time to tackle your reading list or sit down, relax, and enjoy a fun beach read. Our next guest has a lot of suggestions, and maybe you do too. Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are you reading this summer? Do you like to take on challenging books in the summer season, or do you like a lighter read? Or maybe you need a recommendation. Let us know what you like. We'll see if we can help. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Joanne Berg is the founder and owner of Mystery to Me in Madison. That's a bookstore that has a specific name but sells all kinds of books. Joanne, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
Now, do you have a different kind of book you like to read in the summer, or is it kind of the same for you all year long?
Well, as a bookseller, I'm always reading books that come out like all different times. Like I'm reading one now that comes out in October. But if I had my druthers, I'd probably read lighter books in the summertime and heavier books in the wintertime, where I just want to curl up by the fire and take some time.
And do you find, since you sell books to a lot of people, do you find a lot of people trend in that direction? They come in starting in, I don't know, June, July, and say, yeah, nothing heavy, please.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah.
And, you know, how I imagine people ask you all the time, hey, what should I read? How do you triage them? How do you figure out, you know, what that particular person might want to read?
Well, it's the favorite part of being a bookseller is having somebody ask us, you know, to find them a good book. We usually ask them what the last book that they read that they really enjoyed. Sometimes they can't remember the title, but they can remember the storyline.
Or that blue book, right? The blue cover?
Exactly.
You get that a lot.
and we just keep asking questions till we get a little more information about what they would like. A lot of times this time of year, we'll get questions about, I'm traveling to Italy, and I'd like to have a good mystery book that, you know, takes place in Sicily. Ooh. Or I'm traveling to Germany, and do you have anything that takes place in Germany? And so it's been fun to find books, you know, and we're small, but we special order them and get the right books in for people.
All right. You set us a list of books that you're recommending these days. Let's start naming names. We've got a lot of these are new to me. Some are Wisconsin authors I know pretty well. Let's start with this one. A dictionary. This sounds intriguing to me. Dictionary of Lost Words by Pip Williams. I gather this is just out in paperback.
Right. Just a really nice story for the summer. It's about a young girl who is growing up in Oxford, England, and her mother has passed away, and she has to go to work with her father every day. And he is one of the editors of the very first Oxford English Dictionary. So he's sitting at this tall table desk, and she sits underneath, and she's reading books, and she's just, you know, being a young girl waiting for her dad to be done with work. And she's realizing that they're tossing out words that they're not going to put in the Oxford English Dictionary. And she becomes fascinated by why they're not choosing these books. And one of the reasons they're not choosing these words, I mean, not books, words, is because they're words used primarily by women. And so she starts collecting these and comes up with a dictionary of lost words.
That sounds like a fun one for people who are into words. Here's another one, a book called, I'm intrigued by this. I like some kinds of puzzles, like cryptic crosswords and stuff. A book called Puzzle Master by Danielle Trussoni.
Yeah, Danielle used to be a bookseller here in Madison. And I think she's living out in California now. But this book is really interesting. It's about a young boy in high school who is a football player, and he's really into football, and he has a very traumatic brain injury, and he comes out of it okay physically, except he becomes a puzzle savant. He can look at anything and solve a puzzle and read something and know immediately what the answer is. And so a murder happens, and he is called on to help them solve this mystery.
Now, the name of your bookstore is Mystery and Me. As I mentioned, it's not just a mystery bookstore. That said, that one involves a mystery puzzle master. Any other mysteries when people come in, go for the first word in your store title and want that mystery that they're not familiar with yet?
Well, I mean, there are a lot. So one of the things that we do is we really highly curate the mystery section. It's probably about a 30% of our store. And we will bring in mysteries that you're not going to find in an airport bookstore necessarily, or, you know, at Target or Costco. We're looking for books that are just, you know, there's those treasures that are series that maybe older or maybe brand new series. And so, you know, we like to try to ask those questions that we talked about earlier and find out what they like to read and then find them something really different.
Talking to Joanne Berg, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. We are getting ideas for great summer reads. Joanne has a lot of titles to share with us. Maybe you do too. Is there a series that you love to read in any genre that you're always looking forward to that next one to come out? Would people ask you, hey, what should I read? What kind of books do you serve up to them? Or maybe you need a recommendation your own self. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Joanne, you sent us a lot of titles with and authors with Wisconsin connections, including Mary Bergen, a familiar name, I think, to fans of Wisconsin Public Radio, and the book Small Town Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I will sometimes, you know, wake up on a Sunday morning or a Saturday and wonder, you know, I don't really have anything planned, but I just want to do something a little bit different. And I just think this book is perfect because it has a little synopsis about, like, small towns, you know, less than 5,000 people in Wisconsin that you can drive to. And this book is fun because it might have a little unknown museum or, you know, a cafe, or it just tells you a little bit about what's in that area. And I love it for just, it's like a resource book that we can pull off. It's like having a hiking book of Wisconsin, and you pull off and you choose a new hike to take. This one is choose a new Wisconsin town to go experience.
And that's nonfiction. You've got a bunch of fiction by authors in Wisconsin. I just want to drop some names here, and you could tell us about them. Kathleen Ernst, historical mysteries, I gather, set in Wisconsin.
Yeah, she has two historical mystery series. And the first one is about a woman named Chloe Ellefson, who is a museum curator at Old World Wisconsin. And so the series goes through various parts of Wisconsin history as Chloe gathers information about this particular area. Like one of them is about a lace maker, Belgian lace maker. And so they're cultural interest to ethnic groups that settled in Wisconsin. Her second series is, it's about a woman named Hanneke Bauer, who's a Pomeranian Wisconsinite. And so I haven't read that series yet. I have that on my to-do list. But again, it gives a good sense of the historical ethnic backgrounds of people from Wisconsin.
Now, here's one set on a fictional island, a creepy island in Door County, Dead 11 by Giuliano Jimmy.
Yeah, one of my booksellers absolutely loved this book. So there's lots of weird and creepy things, I guess, that go on this island. And the bookseller told me that the reason it's fictional is that the people who live there are trying to keep it that way.
Fantastic. We are getting some great summer reading recommendations. Joanne Berg is with us, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a book you find yourself recommending to everybody these days? What is it about that book that makes you think everybody ought to read it? What do you look forward to reading maybe on a vacation in the summer? What do you pack along on that trip? Do you need a recommendation yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about summer reads with Joanne Berg, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you reading this summer? What recommendations do you have for others, maybe for a vacation read? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to your calls now. Julie is with us in Two Rivers. Julie, hi.
Hi. I just tuned in, so I didn't hear the whole beginning of the show, but I just finished a book that was really good, if you like historical fiction, by Nancy Turner. It's called These Is My Words, and it's historical fiction. It's set in the 1800s, and it's about a woman who's just a really strong woman. She goes through a lot of turmoil and trauma and loss in her family and overcomes all of that. And there's a love story involved, and it's just really good. And it was her first novel, and now she's written a bunch more. But at the end, she talks about writing it and how hard that was. And, give some recommendations for others that might want to write, too.
Julie, thanks a lot. Yeah, she's got I just looked her up online. She's got a handful of books out. Thanks for that recommendation. Joanne, historical fiction set in the United States, Wisconsin or beyond. Do you have any other recommendations?
Oh, gosh, there are a lot of them. there are several of them that not necessarily taking place in the Midwest, but there's... Kristen Hanna writes about the Dust Bowl, and I'm blanking on the name of that book right now. But there's a lot of Westerns, of course. There's a book coming out I think it's later this month, and it's about a woman who is a Native American woman based on a true story of her family growing up as a Native American, as the people were her family were taken off to the Native American schools. You're catching me off guard here. I'm trying to think of the names of all these books.
That's okay. There's a lot out there.
There are.
Julie, thanks a lot for that call. Karen joins us in Oconomowoc. Karen, hi.
Hi. I had a book recommendation for a book that I can only read during the summertime because it makes me feel so cold reading it. It's called One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich.
Yeah, the Solzhenitsyn book, legendary Soviet dissident author, right, Karen? Is that one you go back and reread, it sounds like?
Sometimes. I first tried reading it in the winter, and I genuinely felt too cold.
Wow.
It has to be a summer book.
It is not a cheery, fun summer book, though, right? It's been a long time since I read it. Karen, thanks a lot for sharing that. Joanne, are there classics like that that you might go back to or you might recommend to people, whether or not it's a fun read as that Solzhenitsyn novel? Very important, not necessarily lively and fun, though.
Well, it's interesting because more and more, I would say young adults and young men are coming in and we are looking for classics for the summer. It's because they're not in school and they don't want to read these books because they have to read them. We're selling Anna Karenina. We're selling a lot of Jane Austen. It's just sort of a constant. Joan Didion is another one that we've been asked about. And then just yesterday we sold The Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro. I think that summer can be a time for people to, sort of catch up on some things and maybe take some time that they didn't have before.
Now, you mentioned young men there, and I got to say, I didn't read Pride and Prejudice growing up, and I thought, well, this is not for me. I'm a guy. And I finally read it a few years ago, and then I read some more Jane Austen. It's good stuff. I can't believe I didn't read it all those decades.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people feel that way. And I read some of those books in college and I was like, oh, this is such a drag. And now I read them and I love them. So, I always tell people sometimes if you don't like a book the first time around, it's just not the right time for that book.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call. Annie is with us now in Milwaukee. Annie, hi.
Hi there. I read a lot. I'm lucky enough to be retired, so I read all the time. But the one book that has really stuck with me is The Light Pirate by Lily Brooks Dalton. And it's set in a dystopian novel about Florida becoming uninhabitable because of climate change. And the people, there's always people who refuse to leave when there's a hurricane. And these people refuse to leave Florida. And it's set in the near future as Florida becomes uninhabitable, and it really stuck with me.
All right, Annie,
really,
I gotta ask,
really recommend it.
I like science fiction a lot. I don't always like dystopian stuff because it's too much of a bummer for me. How grimly depressing is this?
I don't like science fiction. I kind of overdosed on it when I was younger. I seldom read it now. And as far as grim things, I wouldn't. There's certain books I won't read because if they're too grim. But okay. This one, it starts out pretty grim, but it's so fascinating. And it's really, she really has her world building, I guess they would call it, how she sets the tone of what happens and the slow disaster, because it doesn't all happen at once, of course.
Gotcha.
So what's happening to Florida? She does a really good job, and it's just fascinating. And it's really stuck with me.
Thanks a lot for that recommendation, Annie. For a post-apocalyptic but not depressing book, I'd recommend Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel, or Mandel, I'm not sure how to say it. Joanne, run with that any direction you want. Science fiction, dystopia, not depressing or depressing enough, take it where you will.
Well, I'm not a big dystopian kind of reader, but the one book that was on my list is Memory of Animals by Claire Fuller. Her books are always, I wouldn't say dark necessarily, but they really get into a depth of the human spirit that you don't always get to. This book, Memory of Animals, is about a young woman. She's, I think, around 27 years old, and she hasn't had a good job experience. She's a marine biologist, and so she decides that she's going to register to be part of this experimental vaccine trial in London. And what happens is there's like everyone around is dying and everyone has left her. The doctors, the nurses have left her. And she's left in this sort of hospital room area with other people who signed up for the trial, but she's the only one that actually got the vaccine. So everything from her perspective about she could, in fact, be the only one to sort of save the world because she's been vaccinated.
Wow.
And the woman, Claire Fuller, wrote this book before the pandemic, which I find kind of creepy.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about Great Summer Reads with Joanne Berg with Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. Time for another caller or two. I think Dan is with us on the road. Dan, hi.
Hi, Rob. I've got several suggestions for mystery writers, two Wisconsin writers. Jeff Nania has the Northern Lakes Mystery Series. His latest one is Muskie Run. And Sue Berg, I don't know if she's related to Joanne, but she has the Driftless Mystery Series. They are all full of red herrings with surprise endings. But then I have an author I've read now. He's got two books out. The third one's coming out this summer. His name is D.A. Galloway. They are historical fiction. First one was Burning Ground. Second one, Fatal Ground. And the one coming out soon is Bitter Ground. His 21-year-old contemporary protagonist from the 1970s does a time travel back to the 1870s. He's with the Hayden Expedition, which is exploring Yellowstone Park before it becomes a park.
Wow.
He meets a Crow woman. They fall in love. He goes home. He comes back the next year, and his girlfriend has a blue-eyed daughter.
Uh-oh.
And it goes on from there. I just can't wait to see the third mystery, which is out. The third novel, which will be out this summer.
Fantastic, Dan. Thanks a lot for that call. Dan dropped a couple more Wisconsin authors' names there, Joanne. And just our last minute or so, I think you have some more Wisconsin-related works on your list. Leave us with a couple more, please.
Well, Casey Osborne she has her debut mystery novel coming out next week called I Know What You Did. And it's my understanding it takes place in Madison and that there's a bookstore that isn't named Mystery to Me, but may have something to do with our store. So I'm looking forward to Casey's book. And then Michelle Wilgen is a local author. She's also the co-owner of the Madison Writer Studio. She has a new book just out called Wine People and talks about the ins and outs of the wine industry.
Great. Joanne, a lot of great suggestions. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thank you.
That's Joanne Berg, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. She joined us to share some great reading recommendations for the rest of this summer. Thanks to all your calls. Everybody else is still on the line. And you can keep, by the way, sharing books over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I see a couple of few people have already done that. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. We get enough recommendations. We could share them on the show in the future. Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday. We'll talk to a cookbook author and food show host about cooking for, you know, your casual gatherings, the best foods for potlucks and cookouts and picnics or whatever you need that dish to pass. And hoping you'll share some of your favorites along the way. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network.